What is hard about being a man? I had to ask, of course, never having been a man or a boy. And it seems to me that there's more that's hard than there ought to be, that we can do something about it. As a community that cares about helping people be their best selves and be happy and whole. One thing I heard when I asked male people I know this over the last few weeks is that one thing that's really hard is the way women give you a wide berth when they see you coming, get nervous when they hear you coming up behind them, especially at night. Nobody really had a solution to this, or of course blame the women. In fact, some said, yeah, I kind of go out of my way myself to like let you know I'm not one of those bad guys. But it's hard. And another is that in conversation they feel sometimes men feel somebody's expecting them, assuming them to be the voice of oblivious privilege. In other words, in both of these cases, it sounds like it would really be nice to be seen just as themselves, which is what we all want. Not as a stereotype, not as the rare predator. I guess the cycle of suspicion may slow down when, in the case of physical violence, violence lessens, even though, of course, we all know that the chance of, as you're walking down a dark street, of any particular man you run into, whatever your gender, being an assailant, incredibly slim. Still, there's a lot of fear, and it's not completely unwarranted. And as for the second, these assumptions that we carry towards one another, well, maybe more conversation that reveals our full humanity to each other. Across genders would help. I asked, how did you learn what it meant to be a man? Not an easy question to answer. I mean, how did we each learn to grow up into the people we are? But people gave it a good go. And not surprisingly, I heard stories of role models. Learning to be generous from his generous father, one man spoke of. Watching how others develop and maintain friendships and emulating those when loneliness threatens. Maybe not something you learn from sitting down and getting a lesson, just how do we learn to be human? We absorb these lessons. And so having examples around them of men who had these fine qualities or were able to deal with things that came with difficulty to the younger man, like maintaining a friendship, that really helped. And then I heard stories of struggle. A man learning to know the difference between his parents' emotional needs and his own, and to choose for himself what kind of person he wanted to be. Now, there isn't anything necessarily gendered about these things, which is kind of the point. We all grow to develop certain qualities that we value, such as generosity. We all learn how to do things we want to do, like make lasting friendships, by observing others as they do these difficult things. We all have to learn to respect our parents if possible while also becoming our own people. This is part of becoming an adult human being, whatever your gender. And likewise, we all, regardless of gender, carry some of the burdens that men express. Competitiveness, social isolation, imposter syndrome, a fear of vulnerability, shame about our failures. These are part of the human condition. These are dilemmas we struggle with as we grow into adulthood. But the ways we define masculinity and the rigidity of those definitions can make it particularly difficult for those who are trying to grow up to be male adults. And Father's Day seemed like a good day to think about those a bit. International Men's Day is a ways off, so I didn't want to wait. This is a quote. Research on 18 and 19-year-old men found that men who identified with rigid beliefs, that men must provide at any cost, be invulnerable, or be self-sufficient, were more likely to have suicidal thoughts and exhibit signs of depression. The researcher concludes that idealizing high traditional masculinity, as he labels it, is a risk factor, especially when the accidents of life make a man temporarily unable to clear those high bars. Many of us have times when we're jobless, we worry about whether we can provide for others or even for ourselves. And of course, when we're emotionally vulnerable, when we're grieving or ill or frightened. Scott Gilman says of these, the rigid beliefs as projections of manhood stuck with me to provide, and that your value as a provider is the measurement of, is your measurement as a man. To be strong, or as in the researcher's quote, vulnerable, invulnerable at all times, and to be self-sufficient. Gilman says, as values, perhaps those principles or beliefs could stand as meaningful and purposeful goals. As a measuring stick of self and social worth, they are a disaster. I want to say they are a disaster to people personally, just individually, what they do inside someone's heart. They're a disaster for interpersonal relationships. Because really, have you tried to get close to somebody who thinks they always have to be invulnerable and completely self-sufficient? It's hard. There may be even a disaster on the world stage. When I was thinking about this sermon, I was listening to a This American Life. I mean, I'm laughing because the stakes were so low, but the episode, This American Life is a podcast that and radio show that deals with a different theme each time, and this particular theme was that guy. The person or being or other phenomenon against which we tend to measure ourselves, the person that we focus on, they're not just any guy, they're that guy, that one. And they told a story of two men who got into a head-to-head about a mileage race. You had to rack up a certain number of miles before a certain date, and whoever racked up the most miles in their region would win a year's supply of Chipotle bowls or something. Really, I mean, so the interviewer said to the guy he was talking to, do you even like Chipotle? And there was a sort of hesitation, like maybe I should be diplomatic here, they just gave me a year of free bowls, but, and he said, yeah, you know, it's okay. But it was really clear that he and his rival, that guy, got into it not for their love of Chipotle. They got into it largely because of the way the race was done. There was a leaderboard, and you could see at the end of each person's exercise that, you know, it would upload, and you would see immediately how you were doing on the leaderboard. So each of them noticed, as they became quickly the people with the most mileage, they noticed how close they were. And they just got, without even knowing each other, got into this rivalry. I mean, let's call them Bill and Ted. I can't remember their names. Bill would do his walk, and then he would see the next morning, Ted put on another 10 miles. He's ahead of you. And so Bill would walk even more that day. And then Ted was doing the same thing, and he would walk out even more. It got to the point that the last day, when they were neck and neck, and they each worked a long day at their important jobs, they completely ignored their own personal needs and their families and went and walked and walked and walked, or ran, I guess it was, to meet this deadline, to be the one to beat it. The winning guy ran 60 miles that day. 60 miles! What is that, 2.5 marathons? I mean, I kept expecting the story to end with one of them had a heart attack. I was scared. Why did they keep going? Ego, competitiveness. Each of them had a child who said, you know, I'm looking at the rules, and if you have a draw, You also get the Chipotle bowls. And I personally, your daughter, really want the Chipotle bowls, so maybe you could work it out. And each one said, yeah, if he comes to me and suggests a draw, I'll say yes. But I'm not going to do that. I heard all this and I thought, what happens when each of these people is in charge of a government with an army? Because it was kind of funny, and nobody had a heart attack, and the stakes were low, but at the same time, the stakes were low. Now, I have no, you know, physical stamina whatsoever, and I have no ego wrapped up in my physical abilities, so I could laugh. But I get the bit about being competitive. As I said, you don't have to be male. Still, I thought, what is going on that you can't say, all right, this competition is very fun, but I'm tired. Maybe I'll run a few miles and go home. I'm not going to keep going till midnight trying to beat this guy. I'm not going to run 40, 50, 60 miles to be the one to win. I'm pretty sure there's something in there about masculinity in our culture that made it so hard for them to say no. That made it a measuring stick of their self-worth. And that's a disaster. This one just turned into a funny story. But as a way to live, it's a disaster. But I agree with Gilman. I mean, the goals of being able to provide for others, being strong, being self-sufficient, they're laudable goals for people of any gender. This is what we try to do as adults, among other things. It's when they're made too rigid that they not only cause great harm to the individual, but ironically, undermine themselves. You know, because you can't really be strong and self-sufficient when you are tormented by a deep existential sense of failure, of having no worth to others, no worth as a person. And then you can't provide for others. This is where people begin to think the people they love are literally better off without them. No wonder men complete suicide at a rate of almost 4 times that of women. And if you're thinking about suicide or self-harm, please call 988, the National Lifeline. The information's also on your online order of service. Interestingly, women attempt suicide at far higher rates than men. I'm sorry with some of these sentences to imply that there are more than two, that there are only two genders. That's just because the research only looked at men and women. Now, a suicide attempt that lands a person in the ER or the hospital, or just gets their friend over to help them through a hard night, but that thankfully leaves them alive, that's often called a cry for help. Sometimes disparagingly, but crying for help is exactly what we need to do when we're feeling worthless or hopeless or ashamed. When what we really want is not to die, but to live another day to try to be happy and whole. Everyone struggles with these things. Being out of work, for example, can cause a spiral of shame and self-doubt in anyone. Women are no strangers to the pressure to be strong and invulnerable. Non-binary folks know what it's like to feel like, you know, if you admit weakness, you're really just complaining or seeking attention. These are part of the human condition. We intensify them in men by making the qualities of masculinity, well, the qualities of masculinity, instead of just humanity. Just to say, hey, be strong, not because it's what it means to be a man, but because you're an adult, you're a human, and you want to develop strength. But also, of course, we intensify them by making them so unbending, because that's not how these qualities work, and it's not how human beings work. So let's look a little more closely at some of those traditional beliefs about what it means to be a man. One, courage. So what does it really mean to be courageous? I'm thinking of a young boy on the Immortal album, Free to Be You and Me. Yeah, I'm a Gen Xer. He can't stop crying about an incident at school, and he says apologetically, "Only sissies cry." And the understanding adult, his principal, confuses him greatly by arguing, "A sissy is somebody who doesn't cry because he's afraid someone will call him a sissy if he does cry." But it's true, minus the sissy language, of course, it takes courage to cry, to acknowledge weakness in any way. So who's being brave? The one who sucks it up and doesn't let anyone know how he's feeling, or the one who lets his vulnerability show? Courage is a laudable quality, so let's encourage the courage that men show when they allow themselves to be vulnerable. And I'm not shaming people who can't cry. It's really easy to have it trained out of you at an early age. I don't want anybody to be ashamed of trying to be invulnerable. Just to recognize there's many kinds of courage. And we could look at the ones that really allow us to be human and healthy. So courage is one, strength is another. Again, it takes strength of character to say, "I need help." The kind of strength that says, "I can handle it all on my own," is really a caricature of strength rather than the real thing, especially when you get to things that nobody can do on their own, or that no one can be, you know, expected to already be able to do. We build our strength by seeking help and learning. And also when we seek strength in each other, which we do, we want our partners, our friends, the other members of our community to have strength of character, to be able to push through the hard things. We value that. It's important. It's a wonderful quality to strive for as a man or anybody else. But what does that strength look like in your friends, in your partners, in your family members, in your community members? Well, part of it looks like openness, listening, like being able to hear a cricket in the crowd and not just the rattle of money. Something else, sadly, many men in our culture are taught. Their whole worth is in what they do for a living and how much money they bring in and who they can support and what kind of car they can drive. But that's not what the people in their lives, most of them, see as strength. There's more of a give and take. Oh, you're strong enough to have a conversation with me. Oh, you're strong enough to enter into a deep and difficult question about what we should do as a community. And then there's capability. Again, a wonderful quality, but what does it mean? When I ask men about what it is like to be a man, I hear stories of a life behind a kind of armor. I spoke to a young man, not yet 20, who says that he's expected to be able to do things, just do anything, and if not, he has to pretend or learn really fast. I said, "Do things like what?" He said, "Like lift heavy objects." He's pretty strong, so I might have raised an eyebrow. But he said, "But, you know, just the people expect that of him who know nothing about him except always see a male person. Can you lift this?" Or here's one that baffled him. He was being bullied by a girl at school, and he really came in for a lot of ribbing by other students, boys, who said, "You could beat her up. Why don't you do that? He's not a fighter. He's not going to beat somebody up for bullying him. But he's supposed to be able to do that. That's what's considered being a capable man." And then also, you know, can you repair a car? Can you fix the problems in your division at work? Of course you can. And you're not supposed to ask for help. You just got to fake it. And you think nobody else is faking it. Here's something non-men can offer, and I offer it in the sincere hope that as scary as it is to hear it, it is a true lifeline, those of you who have to pretend to be capable all the time. We already know you're not. We know you're scared. We know you need help. The facade isn't fooling us. We know you don't know it all. And the vast majority of us don't think less of you for it. Because we know we don't know it all too. That's most of us most of the time. Anyone who does think less of you because you admit ignorance, uncertainty, vulnerability, hurt, fear, they have a problem. Tell them where to get off, okay? Of course, this is the mirror men often look into when they present this facade, pretending to be strong and confident. So here's what we can do. All of us of whatever gender, I'm talking to men as well, what we can do to help is to refuse to be that mirror, to instead offer a hand and say, you don't have to know how to do everything. Here, let's learn together. To offer open arms and say, what you're going through is hard. I get it. I've been in a similar place. Are you a hugger? Would a hug help? When the young man I interviewed told me that he hears from people of all genders, men don't cry, I asked him, how did you manage to get to this point in your life, actually able to express your feelings, including vulnerability? Because he seems to me to be resisting rigid models of masculinity pretty well. He said, well, when I heard that, which, as he said, he heard it from men, he heard it from women, he heard it from friends. He said, I thought, that's stupid. Good for him. Well done. But it sure helps if you've got someone else saying, that's stupid. Men have their hearts broken. They lose people they love. They face terrifying prospects. They lose out on a job they really wanted. Of course, men cry. So we can be that. We can say what people need to hear. Like, you know how with the welcoming congregation, we have a sign there. This is our program that says we are welcoming to people of all sexual orientations and gender identities. We know that we need to be explicit, especially because churches are so known as a place where it is not safe to be LGBTQIA. We have to tell people up front, you will be welcome here. And then maybe people will be able to take the risk. Oh, I could hold my girlfriend's hand. Oh, I can tell people I use they pronouns. That's how people feel because we've made it safe. So by explicitly saying, this is what I mean by strength and courage and capability, we make room for men to be whole, to take that risk without feeling maybe that it's an existential risk. I did ask the people I talked to when I remembered what was good about being a man, too. And one thing I heard was, you know, maybe you have this too, he said, as a woman. He said, but it's like I'm part of a brotherhood, even with people I don't know. Hey, bro. Like we're connected, just me and any other man I might happen to see. That's a lovely feeling. Yes, people of other genders have that too. It's nice to have that feeling of, yes, I'm part of this subset of humanity. We get something about each other that other people don't get. And it's perfectly possible to feel like that without feeling like you have to be the better one, the best, the only, and that everybody in that brotherhood has to be totally on top of things, strong, brave, and perfect. As adults, we all get it. We all get that it's hard to be human. So what we can offer each other again and again, by example, by word, by checking in and reassuring each other is, you don't have to do this thing alone. Like I was talking about with the lichens a few weeks ago. None of us do. And a lot of people, particularly in this culture, men, need to hear it. You don't have to do it alone. You really can't do a lot of it alone. I won't think anything less of you if you can't. And if anyone does think less of you because you need help to get through this thing called life, well, that's just stupid. Poor them. But you and I here, we're going to help each other because being a human being is hard, and the way we manage it is by doing it together. Can we create that? Can we have it on the wall, a plaque, like we're a green sanctuary and a welcoming congregation? We are a positive masculinity community. Be who you are. We won't tell you. Men don't do that. We won't say, you don't know how to do that already? We'll say, welcome to being human.